This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Welcome to the Gun Owners News Hour with your host and Executive Director of Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt.
And welcome to this edition of the Gun Owners News Hour. I want to talk today with Brian Daugherty. He is the author of Gun Control on Trial, Inside the Supreme Court Battle Over the Second Amendment. And it is a very, very good summary of the litigation and the decisions that preceded the Heller case, which was a very welcome statement. Not the last word, but certainly very welcome decision on the part of the Supreme Court that, we have to agree with a lower court decision, the only one, that there is an individual right. And that was pretty stunning after years and years and years of gun control. And I imagine it took people like then mayor of the District of Columbia, Adrian Fenty, probably put him in shock, because he had said that after 32 years, when the gun ban was still in effect, we've got to keep this gun ban because it's been making everybody safer. So the Heller decision was like a bombing run on these clueless folks in the District of Columbia. And maybe the mayor had been the only one not aware of the fact that there were a lot of dead bodies to, if they were able to speak, would say, hey, look at me. Anyway, Brian Daugherty, you have made a wonderful contribution, something that hopefully a lot of attorneys are going to have. Not that it's a legal book or difficult to read, but it is an excellent summary to show just what kind of a wilderness there was out there until the Heller decision came down. So we thank you for that, and we thank you for reminding us of the unreality of some of the elite that could actually say that the District of Columbia had been made safer by its gunman.
I want to point out the level of delusion that Mayor Fenty had to have to believe that. You know, the laws in question that got overturned in the Heller case were essentially barred any citizen from having a working weapon of any sort, you know, in their home. There's a lot of complications behind it, but that was the sort of where the rubber met the road for a citizen. And that was passed in 76, right? And in every single year between 1976 and when those laws were overturned in 2008, every year but one, D.C.'s murder rate had been higher than it was the year before it was passed. And then 10 of those years, D.C.'s murder rate was twice what it had been right before that ban was passed. So there is absolutely no reasonable way that anyone looking at reality could have believed that D.C.'s gun laws were making the city safer. And I also want to point out as a little addendum to that, that in the 8 years since those laws were overturned, D.C. murder rate, you know, despite what the gun controllers might have had you fear, did not in any way keep going up. And in fact, they continued to keep going down. 2016, for example, there was a 14% drop from the year before in D.C.'s murder rate. So D.C. is doing way better in terms of citizen safety after its ridiculous gun restrictions were overturned.
They had the amazing assumption that people really don't ever use a gun in self-defense. And I guess they never read any. Well, admittedly, it's probably something that you're more likely to find in the newsletter from Gun Owners of America. Certainly the American Rifleman has a compilation of self-defense firearms uses in every issue. Many gun publications have some reference of one sort or another to activity of that sort where people do defend themselves. But you would imagine that, that when he's talking about his gun law, and he's going to make a statement, that he might just run it by a couple of attorneys and maybe somebody with editorial background experience, just anything like that to do a little fact check. When you live in liberal land, fact-checking is not really all that necessary.
Yeah, I found, you know, obviously end up debating this issue a lot, you know, both in person and in print and, you know, in comment threads on the web or whatever. And I definitely find that people who are hostile to gun rights think that their position is just so almost metaphysically correct. They just like don't like guns. They just go, well, a gun can hurt someone, right? So they're bad, and they're kind of immune to the facts of the matter. And Mayor Fenty in this case was a sterling example of that. And we actually, interesting twist, which I discuss in my book, is that it was because of Mayor Fenty sort of blindly arrogant misunderstanding of the issue that Second Amendment fans even got their victory in Heller, because if D.C. had, you know, the people fighting the Heller case had won in a lower court, right? And D.C. could have just taken that loss and said, okay, I guess we can't actually bar everyone in our city from defending themselves with handguns. But they were arrogant. They didn't understand what was going on. And they themselves were the ones who had the case appealed to the Supreme Court and, you know, laid the groundwork for the Heller victory. So thank you, Mayor Fenty, for misunderstanding the situation so terribly.
If Gun Owners of America were ever to have an awards banquet for those making a significant contribution to the Second Amendment, I think we'd have to have the mayor on the dais. That's just quite amazing. So, at the federal level, there weren't, numerically anyway, there weren't a whole lot of gun cases. There was the Dick Act, which misconstrued what the militia is back in 1903. And then we come up to the 1934 Machine Gun Act, and that just virtually outlawed a whole class of firearms. And that didn't seem to bother that many people, and I guess that was because there aren't that many people that can afford to buy a machine gun, even without the consideration of what $200 was worth back in 1934, which I don't know, would have been $1,000, $2,000 maybe, at least. That, you know, most people just, well, like myself, I could go buy a machine gun here in the state of Virginia, but the artificial price because of the ban means that anything that I would buy had to have been made before a date in 1986. And I'm not going to shell out all that money. And even if I had the money for the gun, the price of ammunition anymore today is such that you pull that that trigger on full auto mode and don't get your finger off fast enough, you just went through a box of ammo. It's not real cheap. It's not for us po-folk to be involved in. Anyway, there were two basic schools of thought that it seemed to be where most people gathered in these two camps, and that was the individual rights theory that, yeah, the Second Amendment was meant to guarantee individual people the right to keep and bear arms, and then the collective notion that, well, you had to be in a militia, and probably, I don't know, there might not even be a couple hundred people in the country that belong to a militia that's run by one of the states of any sort of, at all. So it, under that construction, the Second Amendment would be a total dead letter until Emerson and then finally the Heller decision applied to the whole, eventually after the McDonald case, which was kind of like Heller 2 in some respects, then the whole country.
If people don't get the distinction between Heller and McDonald, Heller was the case based on the D.C. law that first established in modern Supreme Court jurisprudence to settle that question that you just mentioned, which is, does this right actually accrue to individual citizens of the United States, irrespective of their membership in an organized militia? And the Heller decision said yes, but because D.C. is a federal enclave, initially that decision would have only applied to laws and bans passed and enforced by the federal government. And of course, there's a vast majority still to this day of restrictive gun laws on the state and local level. The McDonald case in two years later aimed at Chicago, which also had an essential ban on
Brian, let's pick up with McDonald. We're coming into a break talking with Brian Daugherty. His book is Gun Control on Trial, and we're going to be right back in just a minute.
The answer to being in control of your own health care is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
You haven't experienced yogurt until you've tried Amasi, embodying health and flavor in a true whole milk, green-fed dairy beverage. Every sip pays homage to our old-world cows and the ancient culturing methods their milk benefits from. With over 30 probiotics, Amasi's undeniably nutritious, refined, cultured sensation bolsters your health and awakens your passion for dairy. Amasi's so good, and you need to try it. Contact your Youngevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to gcnteam.com.
Are you retired or facing retirement and you're afraid your income is going to be less than you'd like? I'm Pharmacist Keith. Dr. Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, and I want to show you a low-cost way to create your own business working around your current schedule, creating extra income that will last for years to come by joining Dr. Wallach's crusades, spreading his message of better health. To learn more, visit radio.recordedvideo.com. That's radio.recordedvideo.com, radio.recordedvideo.com, or call 866-257-3105 for a recorded message.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting, providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com, virtual care anywhere.
Welcome back to the Gun Owners News Hour, exploring a wide range of Second Amendment issues. Here's your host, Larry Pratt.
My guest today is Brian Daugherty. We're talking about his book, Gun Control on Trial, Inside the Supreme Court Battle. over the Second Amendment. Brian, you were talking as we went into break about the Heller case, and then I didn't know if you wanted to say anything else about the McDonald case that came out of the city of Chicago, but... Yeah, go ahead.
As I was saying, the Heller case, since it involved the D.C. law, and D.C. is a federal enclave, it would have only applied to the federal government. Now, of course, the modern tradition in American jurisprudence, which I do agree with, is to apply the rights defended in the Bill of Rights to the states as well, even though they originally were just meant to apply to the federal government. But it took another court case to establish that. And that was the McDonald case, which was a challenge to Chicago's gun laws, which were pretty much as bad as D.C. So after McDonald, it is now settled law that states and localities also are supposed to obey in the way that they regulate guns the core idea of Heller, which is actually a little bit limited in Justice Scalia's opinion. It basically says that you do have a right to own commonly used weapons for self-defense in the home. Now, we can see that leaves an enormous number of issues regarding the way guns are regulated in this country still unsolved. Questions about what sort of people have the legal right to obtain weapons, what restrictions on the ability to sell and market weapons might be permitted, what about the ability to carry a weapon outside your home, whether concealed or open. All these issues are still unresolved. And the thing that's bothered me lately, and it's also bothering Justice Thomas, and it seems to be bothering newer Justice Gorsuch as well, as the Supreme Court, after doing such forward-thinking and, Second Amendment-protecting decisions in 2008 and 2010, has kind of walked away from the issue. You know, they left the field a little bit confused, and they don't seem interested in revisiting it. You know, again and again, cases come up for potential consideration by the Supreme Court, covering issues like restrictions on concealed carry, issues like age restrictions on who can own guns, and the Supreme Court has been declining to take them up, and Justice Thomas has been calling them out about it, and he points out, and I think this is very correct, that they clearly, even after Heller, even after McDonald, our current Supreme Court is treating the Second Amendment as a sort of stepchild of rights, that clearly laws that restricted the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment in similar ways, the court would not just ignore them. So it depends on how optimistic, pessimistic you are. You know, when I was researching and writing about the Heller and McDonald cases, I got kind of excited. I thought, wow, this is really, as long as the sort of ideological, construction of the court remained the same, because those decisions were very narrow. That's worth pointing out as well. Both of those decisions were 5-4 decisions. Both of them involved Scalia, who's now gone. So it's a sort of delicate balance that even, the limited decisions in Heller and McDonald relied on. And the court doesn't seem to want to go any further right now. And it's a shame, in my opinion.
Yes, I quite agree. You mentioned some of the very limited nature of those two decisions. One by the way it was presented came out of the District of Columbia, rightly could only apply to the District of Columbia. But McDonald, while it applied to the whole country, had all these limitations on what it meant and what it didn't mean. And I wonder, and maybe you know, because you've been able to get some inside skinny on some of these things, was that a compromise on Scalia's part? He wrote that decision, and so all of the limitations that you've mentioned were in something that he wrote. Was that what he had to do to pay the price to get a decision at all?
I cannot speak authoritatively to that. The Supreme Court justices do have a long tradition of not sort of talking out of school about what is behind their positions. It's possible someone who may have directly had Scalia's ear may know something that I do not know. It is probably worth laying out the limitations that Scalia built in. I'm actually going to quote from his decision here for a minute. He says these exact words: "The Second Amendment right is not unlimited. It is not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever, in any manner whatsoever, and for whatever purpose. For example, concealed weapons prohibitions have been upheld under the amendment or state analogs, and the court's opinion should not be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons or the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the sale of arms. I'm done with quoting Scalia here. As a Second Amendment lawyer said to me, it's very interesting, built into that, if you say that it's okay to have laws forbidding carrying a firearm in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, right, that seems to imply that if there are sensitive places where maybe it can be banned, there are also non-sensitive places where the Second Amendment should dictate that the carrying of weapons should not be banned. So even in seeming to limit the right, Scalia actually maybe slyly sort of made it clear that, hey, it shouldn't be legal under or constitutional under the Second Amendment for localities or states to completely bar the carrying of weapons, or I would also say to unreasonably restrict it. But unfortunately, especially with laws out of California, you know, the Supreme Court has had some opportunities to consider this issue of what bans on carrying, whether concealed carrying or open carrying, are constitutional, and they don't seem willing to do that now.
As I mentioned just a few minutes ago, there are these two basic camps dealing with the Second Amendment as to who it applies to. The individual rights theory, which I believe both you and I would say is also the one that was supported by the folks that wrote the Constitution, and so that should really govern. Then there are those that think, well, no, it depends on what the latest group of justices had for breakfast this morning as to what the Constitution means. And it just seems to be an unending debate, because there are those that I think at bottom they're elitist, and they think that what the founders thought, what you and I think, doesn't matter because we're just a bunch of schlubs. They're the ones that are enlightened, and they'll tell us what's good for us.
Basically, you know, they can rely on the fact, which is a fact, that a gun can be a very dangerous tool, and people can be harmed by it, like undeniable. But then they take a leap with that. They ignore things like the ways guns can and frequently are used to defend life and property, and want to take them away from us.
Yeah,
the Constitution shouldn't let them.
No, it shouldn't, and it wouldn't if we didn't let them. Talking with Brian Daugherty, D-O-H-E-R-T-Y, Gun Control on Trial.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
Message and data rates may apply.
Remembering when to change your fridge filter is a hassle. Remembering the right filter is almost impossible. So at Filters Fast, we have some good advice. Forget it. Instead, remember this. Text BEST 33 to 443-443 and check fridge filters off your to-do list forever. Get it all taken care of for a fraction of big box store prices with a Filters Fast brand filter. To see how much you can save, plus get free shipping, text BEST 33 to 443-443. With a huge range of brand name filters available, Filters Fast is America's number one online filtration company. And you can get a Filters Fast brand filter for a fraction of the price, delivered to your door every time you need it. No need to remember. It's not a matter of if you need a fridge filter. Why not text to get it taken care of? To see how much you can save and get free shipping, text BEST 33 to 443-443. That's BEST 33 to 443-443.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-261-9818 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-261-9818. Again, 800-261-9818.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Welcome back to the Gun Owners News Hour, exploring a wide range of Second Amendment issues. Here's your host, Larry Pratt.
Well, thanks for being with us today. We're talking with Brian Daugherty, D-O-H-E-R-T-Y, talking about his book, Gun Control on Trial. And Brian is perched on the left coast. He's the senior editor of Reason Magazine, which is probably the flagship publication anywhere in the libertarian school of thought. And, Brian, we really appreciate your work. One of the things that you mentioned in the book, which is kind of an embarrassment, I would think, to anybody that says they support the Constitution, is that at the time the Bill of Rights was written, or even before the Constitution, pretty much all of the states at one time or another, I think all of the colonies had had laws compelling men to have guns. And that just seems like such a distant notion now. But at the time, there were no police departments in the country. And if there was a sheriff here or there, he didn't have a whole lot of deputies and he didn't have much of a budget. So it was kind of assumed, if not required, like those laws did, that you'd be able to protect yourself because you can't call 9/11.
Yeah, it was. That's actually, that fact actually has I think cluttered the debate about the original meaning of the Second Amendment, because certain elements clearly built into the core understanding of citizenship and rights for the founding generation, they were so obvious to everyone then that they didn't think it needed to be debated a lot. Like, no one at all in that era could have ever believed that the government could have the right to impose laws like the D.C. laws that got overturned by Heller, or the Chicago laws that got overturned by McDonald. It just would have been inconceivable. And so there's some people say, oh, there's not a sufficient record of them saying out loud that the government shouldn't be able to disarm the people. It just would have been inconceivable to them. It would have been like feeling it necessary to write in the Constitution that the government, you know, couldn't prohibit you from eating. You know, it was that core to the understanding of a free people, and for both personal self-defense and for the defense of the state and the society, which is why the Second Amendment mentions militias as well as establishing a personal right. And that, of course, has confused a lot of people over the years as well. But there were sort of two ideas built into the Second Amendment, one about personal self-defense and one about civic defense. And both of them demand that American citizens, you know, have the ability, if they so wish, to own arms.
It's interesting that as we have moved away from the notion of an individual right to keep and bear arms, we have been drifting more and more toward the idea of a big government. So if I'm not able to protect myself, if I shouldn't be able to protect myself, then I'll use 9/11 for that and call the government, then it doesn't seem like much of a stretch. In fact, it seems, looking back historically, that it's axiomatic that as I surrender my right to keep and bear arms, I'm also concomitantly turning for everything to the government handout. So I think we've got a key to what we're becoming here in the United States. And with some exceptions, I think we can say that those who own a gun are making a statement, at least without necessarily saying so, that thank you very much, but I can't count on the government for this pretty important thing in my life, my own skin.
So that you can't is, to me, like, so obvious. Like, you're really denying reality to maintain that even, you know, we're talking about in the founding era, well, there weren't a lot of police, very true, so every household needed its own defense, you know, against others, wild animals, the frontier. Even today, when there's tons of police, it is still abundantly clear that, except in the most rare, weird coincidence, there is no way for the existence of police officers to actually provide you with personalized self-defense on your person if you're out in the world or your property, if you're in your home. It just can't happen. They know they can't. They don't have any obligation to legally, and they can't. So it's sheer madness to pretend that the existence of police, you know, obviates or overwhelms the need, if you want to have a weapon for self-defense in your home or even to have a weapon on your person as you move through the world.
So the effort to deny what we're talking about, this historical fact that we had this tradition of individual gun ownership, even to making it mandatory for quite some time, it's kind of follows that since we've pretty much forgotten that, a character by the name of Belial, a professor at Emory University, had written a book debunking, quote-unquote, the Second Amendment. And it turned out it was all an amazingly enormous lie.
he thought he
could get away with it, I guess.
Yeah, he did the most amazing, like, you know, 14-year-old kid lying to his teacher kind of nonsense. He claimed to have examined certain probate record data that had actually been destroyed in a fire a century before he claimed to see it. When other scholars wanted to check his notes, he would say, oh, yeah, my notes were destroyed in a flood, you know. And in certain
hey, teacher, things, the dog ate my homework.
Exactly. It was insane. And in the cases where scholars actually could check his data, they found that he was miscounting things and misrepresenting the facts. And what he was trying to do, for people who don't remember him, was claim that hey, most Americans in the founding era in the 19th century, guns were not really a big deal. No one really had them. You know, we don't actually have a national tradition of personal gun ownership, and everyone is very eager to believe it. He won his profession's highest award. Until people who actually knew more about the topic pointed out, hey, almost all of this is an absolute lie.
And of course, the cherry on top of all of that is when it finally became impossible to ignore what a monstrous lie he had fabricated, he did have to leave his job at Emory University in disgrace. He had to surrender the big historical national award that he had won.
There was a kind of happy ending. Getting the punishment that he deserved for his complete scholarly malpractice in the name of trying to win a political argument.
The scholarly malpractice, I think that's pretty good. One of the comparisons that I've made to the efforts in our time to ban guns, strictly regulate guns, is to compare this or that proponent of that view to King George. That we've seen this movie before, and I try to ask people to consider how it ended for King George when he tried imposing gun control here in the United Colonies. And I'm not sure that while there's a lot of people that may not share our view about this, that there would be enough that you could probably indeed start the Second American War for Independence if you actually did something, certainly at the national level.
Yeah, I think the anti-gun people misread to their potential peril, the mood of the country about this, and even if, you know, only 40% or 50% of American households own weapons, their belief, their justified belief in their right to do so is very strongly held, and the benefits that would be gained from the sort of gun bans that they want would be very, very small, and it's silly of them to even think of it.
Well, they seem to think of it all the time, dream about it all night long, but in any case, for the moment, we seem to have them at bay. Talking about Brian Daugherty's Gun Control on Trial, we're going to be right back.
Fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center-cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready-to-eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and serve. Life-saving, ready-to-eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest price filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
It's about time something new came along for better selling and buying online. And I found it.
What now, Marge?
It's buysellmakeoffer.com.
Never heard of it.
It's a brand new company. That's why you've never heard of it. It's the newest and best way to sell any products online. I did all the research.
Sell my car?
Yes.
Our home?
Yep.
My golf bag?
Your golf clubs. All of them.
How about your purse collection hoard?
Hey, now.
You said any product.
Right. I did.
Hmm.
We get 30 days free.
Really?
Packages starting from only $9.95. And buysellmakeoffer.com will never charge item fees, ever.
Hmm.
Never. And this is cool. Listen to this. You can even use Skype or video to show your items.
That's cool.
Yes. All we have to do is go to the website, sign up, and then load our stuff to sell. I love this site.
Buysellmakeoffer.com.
Buysellmakeoffer.com. You got it?
Buysellmakeoffer.com.
Buysellmakeoffer.com. Better selling, better buying.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting, providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com. Virtual care anywhere.
Welcome back to the Gun Owners News Hour, exploring a wide range of Second Amendment issues. Here's your host, Larry Pratt.
Talking today with Brian Daugherty. He's the author of Gun Control on Trial. He's also senior editor of Reason magazine. Very easy enough to find online. Justice of the Supreme Court, Joseph Story. So he's not somebody whose opinion should be completely sloughed off. But he wrote about the Second Amendment as protecting an individual right that enables people to rebel. I think it still does, but we were talking earlier about how the notion of that kind of independent person is a little bit harder for so many of our fellow Americans to get their mind around, even if we're not talking about guns. They just assume that the government is there to help them. And certainly was not the view of Joseph Story, and I believe his was a majority opinion on the court at that time.
Yeah, it was just sort of a basic understanding built into the political culture of America in the early days. Story, there's a direct quote from him. The right of the citizens to keep and bear arms has justly been considered as the palladium of the liberties of the Republic, since it offers a strong moral check against usurpation and arbitrary power of the rulers. Now, that sort of argument was not brought up in front of the Supreme Court in the Heller and McDonald cases. They did not try to argue it based on sort of the civic ability of the people to resist tyranny. But, the founding generation lived through that experience. They actually were at war, with their own allegedly rightful ruler. So they definitely understood that that was important. In the modern context, even saying that strikes most people as unbearably eccentric, and the lawyer named Alan Gura, who argued both the Heller and McDonald cases, I think he might believe in that argument, but he did not think that it would be a winning strategic argument in front of a modern Supreme Court. So he just talked about the individual right for self-defense, against crime and other human beings, not so much for the civic defense against tyranny. But I don't think that idea should be forgotten, and it obviously was on the minds of the people who wrote the Constitution, wrote the amendment and had just fought, you know, a Revolutionary War.
Yeah, I think that was, well, it's good that we don't have something like that in our recent memory. I'm glad about that. But I would imagine that if we had, we would probably be more in agreement with Justice Story. The there was an argument that was, or a point that was made by Justice Roberts in one of these cases during Heller, and I don't always agree with everything that Roberts does for sure, but he asked a great question, I thought. The argument was being made that, well, we're not talking about banning all guns. We're quite within the Second Amendment. We're only talking about banning certain kinds of guns, machine guns. And so Roberts asked, well, then, would it be okay if a municipality, because that's what the ban had been at a municipal level, banned books as long as other media were still available?
Right.
And, boom, how do you answer that question?
Yeah, they don't want to answer it, and the way that the justices and judges who do not treat the Second Amendment the respect it deserves, they just think it's different. They don't really have a good argument for why. I mean, I guess their argument would be, well, you know, guns are dangerous, guns can hurt people, but definitely even after Heller, even after McDonald, all sorts of courts seem willing to restrict our gun rights in ways that they would not be willing to restrict our rights to communicate and our rights to publish. Like, yeah, as you said, and as Robert said, it is not sufficient to say that our rights to free speech are protected if we have one means to communicate and we ban all the others. That's not the way it works. But too many judges want to let the Second Amendment work that way. And my fear, as I think I mentioned earlier, is since McDonald, especially on the Supreme Court level, even the justices who came to the right decision in Heller and McDonald don't seem that interested in actually extending that thinking the way that I think logic and justice would require it be extended. So even, and again, the Heller and McDonald victories were both 5-4. So it's delicate, and, you know, these things are never settled forever. And if there's five justices, you know, 10 years from now or 20 years from now who don't think that way, you know, it could all be reversed. But for now, at least, a complete barring of citizens' rights to own, you know, commonly used weapons in the home is officially protected. It's a victory that can't be taken for granted. It needs to be held on to. And unfortunately, a lot of localities and states, you know, seem to think that that means, well, it still means that we can keep you from carrying your guns, or it still means we can keep you from buying a certain number of them in a certain period, or all sorts of things that, again, if applied to other rights, would not be accepted. It's still a delicately defended and understood right, and a sort of insufficiently understood and defended right, you know, even after those great victories.
Now, in the Heller case, the attorney, Robert Levy, had gone and looked for plaintiffs, and he ended up with six that would have backgrounds that would touch many of the bases in the potential arguments that would come up before the court if it got to the Supreme Court. And two of the six, had actually, if I got it right from your book, two of the six had actually had an experience with violent crime. One had been threatened by a local drug dealer, and the other had actually used a gun, shot a burglar in self-defense, and was prosecuted for it in the District of Columbia. So what clearer way could they have chosen to send a message in the District of Columbia from the government is, we hate you, you're expendable, why don't you just go and die?
Yeah, I'll give a couple of examples. The original lead plaintiff in the case, a woman named Shelley Parker, African-American woman living in D.C., she had decided to make herself a bit of a menace to local drug dealers on her block. And, you know, her car window then got broken. Her security camera got stolen. A gang lookout rammed a car into her back fence. People banged on her door shouting obscenities and threatening her. This was not thought enough by D.C. to mean that she should have the right to self-defense in the home. Another one of the plaintiffs, a guy named Tom Palmer, gay man who earlier in his life, he brandished a weapon to protect himself from a bully who was trying to attack him because he was gay. You know, these were people who should have been very sympathetic, even to people, you know, not of a sort of right-wing or gun nut background. But again, like you said, D.C. didn't care. You know, their stupid law that did not make anyone safer, that did not, you know, cut D.C.'s murder rate in any way, was considered more important than their citizens' right to defend themselves. And as we said earlier, we all know that the police aren't going to do it for us in D.C. or anywhere.
Well, I had forgotten him, so you pointed out I can't even count to three. There was another person who got prosecuted for shooting a burglar who had invaded his home. I can't think of a more clear-cut case in almost every jurisdiction in the country. If somebody invades your home, they come in without your express permission, they're fair game. They've lost their rights. If you kill them in defending yourself and your home, well, too bad for them. But apparently that's not the view of the D.C. Fathers.
And the great thing as well about gun ownership and, you know, the statistics, as far as we understand them, about the defensive use of guns show that 76% of the times when you actually are able to use a gun in defense of yourself doesn't require shooting the gun or shooting anyone or killing anyone or hurting anyone. Like, because most people know what a gun is, the mere letting it be known that there's a gun here, I have a gun and I can defend myself, is very often sufficient to make an intruder or a burglar or someone who meant to harm you back down. So it's not even the case that, oh, you know, we need to be all out there shooting people up constantly. Like, the great thing about a gun is it actually allows for the defense of the innocent in the majority of the cases without even having to shoot anyone. So that I like to point that out to people who have this horrible vision that, oh, gun self-defense means that we're just shooting people all over the place. It doesn't have to be that.
Well, Brian Daugherty, I think that's going to have to be your last shot. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for the great contribution to Second Amendment scholarship in gun control on trial. Let's hope that ultimately it gets a sentence of capital punishment.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and, you know, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, There's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.